Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, before we delve into things, I just want to tell you about our Liverpool streaming service. It is Redmen Plus. Get involved over there for extra Redmen shows in video form, in podcast form. You've got documentaries, features, interviews, and a hell of a lot more besides. If you join as a club legend, you get the Discord chat, you'll get free merchandise and a host of extra bonus perks. It's like Netflix for Liverpool fans. Get over there, get involved. Otherwise, let's face it, you're going to miss out on amazing Liverpool stuff in your life. Hey everyone, it is the build-up show. It is going to be Liverpool versus Chelsea, and I'm sat here regretting my decision wholeheartedly to not finish making me cup of tea and get distracted by trying to get the boiler back on, which, look, in the long term for our happiness today was the right call, but that doesn't mean I know I'm not a little bit cut up inside that I haven't got a...
Thanks for taking one for the team.
It's all glamour, isn't it? It's all glamour, this job.
Yeah. There's a running thing that Chris and I have had throughout our entire like lives almost as friends, and we have moments when we've been in, because we've worked other jobs together, and it's like, I bet X doesn't have to do X. And it was always like, you know, in the early Redmen days, it would be like, I bet Tim Lovejoy doesn't have to build his own sets, you know what I mean, and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that Gary Lineker has to fix the boiler in the Match of the Day studio.
He's got other things on his mind, isn't he? He's got more pressing issues to deal with.
Trying to find out where that video was so he can get his own copy of it, probably, at this point. We did have a good chat, actually, about the Gary Lineker sex noises on this week's podcast extra, which is over on redmenplus.com. So if you want to hear me, Chris, Steve and Chloe pulling apart what one of the highlights of British television, then that podcast is available right now over there. But yeah, let's get back to the more serious and pressing matters at hand, which is, of course, the fact that Liverpool have got a football match to play. They are playing Chelsea, Steve, and I said this on the podcast yesterday, but it bears repeating and expanding on, just a huge game of football, not just because it's Chelsea, but it is because it's Chelsea. But it's all well and good, you know, Liverpool seem to find something against Wolves, something familiar, something solid, something more akin to what we recognise as Liverpool. But we now need to do that again and again and again, because the margin for error has gone now, particularly in the league.
But then Chelsea will be having the same conversation that they need to reignite their season somewhere, and games between Liverpool and Chelsea have always had loads riding on them. You know, we saw that last year with the two cup finals and two difficult league matches. And I guess what we found against Wolves, that only means something if we carry the same mentality and the same attitude and the same type of performance into a game against Chelsea. And that's key, and that's the consistency that we haven't had all season. That right there, that's what we need to capture.
Yeah, I completely agree on that, Dan. Mm. You know, when you look back to it, Chelsea not that long removed from being European champions. We're not that long removed from being Premier League champions. As mentioned there, we contested the two domestic cups last season. I don't think either team, either fan base expected this to be a 9th versus 10th battle when the fixtures came out at the start of the season. But it's a much bigger game than a standard 9th versus 10th game. But yeah, because both teams have got ambitions of being higher up the table. Mm. And as I say, there's, 20 league games left to play?
Yeah.
60 points still on the table, which makes you feel a bit more relaxed about it. Now, they're not going to be uncontested points. We need to find a way to get back to winning ways. And as today, but fuck them. ultimately.
No, absolutely, yeah. And we need to, like, see sort of references. We need to show signs that that wasn't another false dawn this season. That was us actually making a statement and saying, no, this is us now, from now until the end of the season. This is the way it's going to be. It might not always be the same group of lads, but this is Liverpool, and this is the way we look. But yeah, like you say, no one, if you'd have told me at the start of the season this was going to be 9th versus 10th, I'd have laughed at your face. It just wasn't going to happen. This is proper El Crapito territory, this one. It's just a poor teams going at it, really. But I don't know. For me, this is us. And like you say, there are a lot of points to sort of play for still. But I think both teams, if this isn't last chance saloon in terms of the top four, they're looking at it. Like, we can both see the last chance saloon. It's just whether we walk through the door or not. And I think the loser of this one potentially could sort of say that's probably us in the top four done, because it's not only is there a lot of ground to make up, but it's another sign that one of these two sides aren't good enough to go on any sort of consistent run to even get close. And I know the consistency required for top four isn't particularly outstanding. However, you're asking a hell of a lot from this point.
I think, you know, in terms of like the top end of the table, it's frightening how far we are off that. And it's really quite annoying at the same time. You know, I could get really down in the dumps about it, or I could get really rageful about it, of how Arsenal are just going to walk the league. And that really fucking annoys me, because the amount of fight we've had to put in to come second. And it's so annoying that we've returned to it. Arsenal have returned right back to what it was like when they used to win the league, when you could win the league in 80-something points. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, we do need to set our sights a little lower, and the idea even of looking at top four at this moment stays just, it's pointless. And I don't mean that it's impossible. I mean that it's a waste of energy for us to focus too high up the league. And in some regards, I'm kind of glad Chelsea are down there in the dumps with us, because it's an opportunity to kind of put the boot in a bit, you know, to kick them down and go, no. You're at the level that you deserve to be at. It's a false position for us, whether it's delusion or not. You know, and the next game will really tell on that. But that's where, you know, I'm really glad it's at Anfield, because having that behind us and having a real something to get our teeth into should work in our favour.
Absolutely. And with regards to top four, that's not in our hands. We need favours from other people. And to be fair, there are lots of points swapping hands where you wouldn't think they would swap hands. So if you can...
I was pleasantly surprised with the United result last night. That was one of the ones that gave me a little note for encouragement. They're in this great run. They're on this, like, on course for a 10-game win streak. Mm-hmm. And then to just drop a couple of points in the last minute is very, very, very
good. And they'll all drop points. Arsenal will drop points. City will drop points. Newcastle will drop points. It is, can we find that formula that allows us to go and win 8-10 games in a row? Because if you can do that, you play yourself back into contention. I'm kind of agree with Dan in that we're probably not really looking at top four at the moment. We need to take this game by game. I know it's a cliche, and managers have used it over the years, and we go, no, they don't do that, because they're always looking at the league table.
But that's our mentality as well, as fans. You know, they'll be espousing that at the Axe, of course they will. You know, the players will go, just focus on what's in front of us. And they've always done that. They always have done.
And as you say, it's a perfect opportunity to really stick the boot in on Chelsea, who like us, had a shocking season. I think they're in a worse position than we are, not just league-wise. I mean, per se, across the project, they're not anywhere near where they think they should be, or where that squad realistically should be. Same for us. Do us no harm at all to be a kind of final nail in their top four coffin.
Their league performance so far, it's just shocking. You know, and I honestly really had to kind of switch off to a lot of it. You know, because. And it was a point we were joking probably around mid-November when the season was breaking, of like, oh, well, this is quite interesting because you've got more results to kind of watch out for. It was really annoying when it was just City and then you'd look, oh, they've won. All right, well, there you go. I've taken a bit of shine off my weekend. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, like, there's lots of teams and more teams are likely to lose. You know, there's not a world really where Brentford, Brighton, Fulham, Spurs, Newcastle, United, and you know, Leicester City and United, of course, but you know, don't drop points in a given weekend. But when to look at Chelsea, I was shocked, genuinely. Like, they've only scored 22 goals this season, like in 19 appearances. For a little context in that, it's the same amount of goals scored as Aston Villa. You know, okay, there's teams that have scored less. But like, in terms of teams that are down the bottom, Leicester City have scored 26, Leeds United have scored 26. They're two teams who you wouldn't be shocked if they got relegated this season, and they scored four more goals this campaign than Chelsea have. It's that lack of cutting edge is one of their reasons why they're throwing money in the transfer market.
Yeah.
But they've got to find a way to make that gel and sell.
Yeah, they certainly are throwing money at the problem, aren't they? There's no two ways about that. I think they've spent like half a billion, haven't they, in the last 6 months or something insane like that. They're just not stopping. That's the Potter effect, it seems, isn't it? Like, he had that problem at Brighton. He seems to have brought it with him. And obviously, he's left Brighton now and they've mended that, or deserve he's mended that problem. And they're scoring free-flowingly. They're not stopping. So I think he hasn't quite settled on a system yet. There's a lot of swapping and changing with his side, his personnel, and of course formations and tactics, which never bodes well for a sort of settled side or a consistent run of form. Behind the scenes as well, it's all a little bit muddled, a little bit up in the air. Steve references the project. I don't think they quite know what they are as a football club yet in this new era. And you've got to give them some sort of leeway, a little bit of grace, I suppose, because they have had injuries. Obviously, they've had a lot of turmoil off the pitch as well, new ownership, new directors of football, etc., plus new managers. So they do have some period of grace, I guess. But listen, when it all boils down to it, like Liverpool, us being ninth isn't good enough, them being tenth isn't good enough. They're going to want to see changes. But on the pitch, yeah, they haven't got Aubameyang. Like, Aubameyang was a strange signing, yeah, and that was never likely to work out. And so it does, it's proved.
It reminded me of sort of 13, 14 Chelsea kind of moves. Mm. Where they'd bring in a guy like, yeah, an Eto. You know, they bring it. They bring an Eto in who's not at as far from his peak. He'll just, the guy, he'll tick over. He'll score a handful of goals or whatever. Mm. And then in the summer they go and buy Diego Costa off the back of that, and he's the guy. He's, yeah, the guy who kicks them on. They had a bunch of forwards who were not quite.
Well, at one point, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah.
They had a bunch, yeah, of forwards. Every now and again they fall into that trap of like the best centre forward moves on. They go and have a bunch of stop gaps, and then they'll get the one. And that'll be the season where they kick on. But again, they keep twisting. They keep adding players to the mix here. Mm. And I think, you know, I mean, we're Liverpool fans. I think that in general we're kind of cast some jealous glances at clubs who were free flowing with the cash a little bit. But I suppose there's always an example there of, it's not been that long since Chelsea rebuilt that squad, and I mean, then won a European Cup and rebuilt it. And some see that as a positive. I feel a little bit like, I don't know, I'm a little wary that they need to start showing a few more results on the pitch before Potter gets any more dough chucked his way.
Take this window, for instance. They just spent 100 million, if you include the Ukrainian winger and the João Felix loan deal. Mm-hmm. They needed a number nine. They bought a second striker. And whilst João Felix was very good in the game before he got sent off, he's picking the ball up in his own half in the centre circle and trying to create play. Kind of Bobby-esque, the difference being that he hasn't got two bodies to aim at further up the field. It's strange, and Dan referenced it before about Graham Potter not really having a specific system. He will tell you he doesn't want one. Mm-hmm. I've listened to him speak. He wants variation. Variation causes confusion, and you get what Chelsea have got now. So, yeah, he's transposed Brighton into Chelsea, hasn't he, really? And it's strange to see.
It's just really interesting to see two clubs, as I say, who this time last year would have had ambitions of, you know, challenging at the top and really kicking on in this position, but coming at it from two completely, utterly different angles. And I guess the question is how positive do we feel about Liverpool? Because I know Chelsea fans are still in the mind. They've been conditioned to be like, if you have five bad results, then your manager's on his way out. Mm-hmm. So I think they're really struggling with how do you support a Chelsea that is known by Roman Abramovich? And I think some Liverpool fans at the moment have been struggling with this idea of, well, what you're supposed to. In the modern world, you're told this is how you talk about football when you have a bad run of results. You've got to consider the player. You've got to say the players are rubbish, and you've got to get rid of the players. You've got to buy new players, and you've got to blame the manager. You've got to get rid of the manager and all that kind of stuff. Whereas in the reality of it, you know, it's the hardest thing about being a Liverpool fan is going, well, when you've got the best manager in the world and he's not getting it right, sometimes you've got to kind of take a big deep breath and just wait for him to fix it. And that's the real note of encouragement about the Wolves results, is that seeing that little bit of something to hold on to and go, well, okay, I can see shoots of recovery from what we've done there.
Yeah.
So yeah, interesting challenge for Potter. I like him. I think he's a good coach, but he can get to fuck this weekend. I want to talk about Mason Mount. Dan, heavily linked again with a move to Liverpool.
Yeah.
He's, I think, have a year left on his contract come the summer. I wasn't overly impressed with him at the World Cup. I was really looking forward to seeing him. You know, there was a point at which Declan Rice, Mason Mount, Jude Bellingham were starting games, and we'd been linked with all of them. And it was a good opportunity to see how does that function as a midfield. Jude Bellingham obviously stole the show. People thought, right, so I was a little underwhelmed by Declan Rice, and I was totally underwhelmed by Mason Mount. But there is something there. He's been linked with Liverpool for a few years now. What's your thoughts?
I am a big Mason Mount fan, to be honest. I think he's a very good technical footballer. I think he has a lot of the attributes that would suit Jurgen Klopp's style, suit the way he wants to play football. He's immensely versatile as well, which is obviously always a plus. We just spoke about not changing systems, but it is important to have players who can play in a number of roles, particularly sort of across the midfield and in more forward areas. I think predominantly he'd be used as like that sort of attacking eight. My only sort of caveat with the whole thing would be, I mean, I know Steve will probably come on to wages and stuff like that. That, not so much, because he's English, he's a great age, the wages side of thing, and obviously there's quotas to fill now in Premier League squads and such, so that's fine. I think when you look at our squad now and the makeup of it, yes, we need midfielders, there's no two ways about that, but in terms of that style of midfield, we've already got, we don't quite know what Fabio Carvalho is yet, we've got Harvey Elliott, we've got Curtis Jones. I wouldn't want to sort of stand in one of their way if it meant Mason Mount, particularly Elliott, I'd probably say on that. So depend on where he'd fit and depend on where he'd play, because he does, like I say, play that sort of attacking midfield role. We might have to change system potentially if we got someone like Mason Mount to suit a little bit better. But as a footballer, I'm a huge fan. I think he's a very good player.
I got to ask you, before we move on to that, though, with to Madan's point, Squant, just your headline.
I think
thought.
You make the point about Harvey Elliott. I think Mason Mount's closer to being the finished product than Harvey Elliott. And there are
he's
games,
a bit older than that.
There are games you could put him in where you wouldn't have the same concerns you would with Harvey. And again, with Carvalho, I think the versatility is a really good thing. I think he's gone stale. I think he's absolutely stale at Chelsea and he needs a fresh challenge. Mm-hmm. He's quite physical. He's quite a big lad. He runs well with the ball. Yes, we might make changes to the system. I think if Jude Bellingham signs for Liverpool, there's a change to the system anyway because mm-hmm. of his box-to-box. There's a dynamic footballer rather than a flat three. We have what we hold. We recycle the ball and we let the front three do their thing. There's an obvious change coming. I would be a fan of moving for Mason Mount, I think, and getting back to his first year at Chelsea type form. I mean, he could have won the League Cup final against Liverpool by himself. He hit the post, he had chances. This is a good footballer and you know, you bring him in and we are lucky enough to get Bellingham over the line. You've got two of England's midfield going forward and there has to be something of value to that familiarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that systemically, it looks a bit off this season, I think one of our chief complaints has been we've tried to evolve away from that flat midfield three or the combative midfield three and whatever. Harvey Elliott's been a huge part of that. They clearly have high hopes for him and they're prepared to adapt what we do to get more out of him. For me, it was actually the Wolves game and it was seeing how Naby plays the eight.
Yeah.
And when there was a lot of times there when it was far more a solo six in terms of Bacetic, and then you had Thiago and Keita pushed up very high. It was a two behind the three at times, particularly when they were starting with goal kicks. And that's all about penning them in and making it really hard for them to play off the back and unsettling them. And Keita fit that loads better than I think a few of the options we've seen this season. And I could see Mason Mount doing that job really well. Because that for me was, I looked at Naby Keita and look, I just think he's a tremendous footballer, but I'm not surprising anyone. I'm not delivering new news when we say you just can't get him on the pitch. So he's a huge frustration. But if you can't get him on the pitch, then they'll move him on in the summer anyway, probably, or he'll move himself on. If they want that, they need to buy more lads like that. Hey, if you can get that in a 6-foot-plus body as well, then we're going to be absolutely unkillable. But I saw how a midfield three all comprised of guys who were under 6 foot actually performed really well in what could have been a physical game. So that makes sense to me. He's got a good eye for goal. He's a creative player. He is relentless when he's really on it. But I think that point is, I think it's now or never. I think if you leave him another season at Chelsea, I think you're going to fight. You're fighting against his own malaise. Maybe it's a loss of confidence or loss of form. He's been fine this season. He's played a lot of football for Chelsea this season, but he's not been the guy from, as you say, from a couple of years ago. But an interesting one. If you're watching live at home or after the fact on YouTube, do let us know your thoughts on Mason Mount. Is that someone you think Liverpool should be making a move for in the summer? Lachille sent us a super chat. It's a little off topic. What is the greatest ever LFC assist? Says his choice would be Neil Mellor versus Olympiakos or Souness Dekeny in the European Cup final. Surely, Trent Alexander-Arnold, corner, Origi, it's got to be up there.
It is up there.
On that, it's 3 years to the day, Alisson to Salah against United.
Oh!
Good shout.
It's a candidate.
That is a strong
candidate. That was the moment. we started.
That's what we
everyone's going to believe us. Yeah. So, yeah.
You also got the Ronnie Whelan flick around the corner for Dalglish's chested winner in the double season at Chelsea. That is a tremendous little flick over the top.
There's a load of Gerrard. That pass against Fulham, was it, when he said something? So that's absolutely
ridiculous. Hendo's done a similar one as
Hendo,
well.
Hendo Salah against United again. We won't talk about that one much because we battered him and it was boss. But Henderson won't be in this conversation just because he isn't.
Yeah.
But that pass is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
Xabi Alonso over the shoulder.
Yeah.
40-yard ball, got clean through and scores. It's the best no-look pass you'll ever see in your life.
Yeah, I'd say just one I'd want to bring up. It was Trent to Firmino in the Club World Cup final. That's an underrated one for me. It was a final, to win it, yeah, later on, extra time, because the vision to pull that off is ludicrous. That's another one we probably won't talk about, but God, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I'd probably plump for the Barcelona one because the speed of thought, the execution. If he doesn't do that 100% correct, Origi's got no chance to put that ball in. And in the context of the game, where we were and what it meant and the folklore and all of that, the fact that Sergio Busquets never tweeted again, just for that, isn't it?
I still watch that back. And I'm convinced Origi's going to miss it every single time it comes. It's that magical moment. I'm worried that I've crossed into the multiverse, and I now live in a world where that doesn't go in. So I live that, and the hairs on the back of my neck stand up every single time I watch that again. The only other one, it's not as good, but in terms of the actual let off of it, was Shaqiri's cross to Gini Wijnaldum for the header. Because he's on the left-hand side and he curls one in. Obviously, Gini gets up, and I have never experienced that. It was bigger than the fourth goal because that was the one. That was the big one. You know, we were on a roll. You know, we'd rallied. And then Gini had obviously come on and,
ridiculous.
Great point in the Discord there, by the way. What a shout.
Great question there.
Yeah, that was great from Lachille. Thank you so much for that. If you've got answers, then do keep them coming in as well in the comments section underneath. Right, we're going to take a very short break. We've got a trivia question to tide you over in the meantime. Graeme Potter made one career appearance as a player against Liverpool. Who was it for? And I'll give bonus points for the year, competition and result. Answers after.
A few weeks ago, I was lucky enough to sit down with Liverpool left-back Kostas Tsimikas. I was able to get an interview with him, to get some quick-fire questions done, and I was lucky enough to host a Q&A with him and John Aldridge at Hotel Anfield in Liverpool. Now, while I was there, I also managed to get him to sign this Liverpool shirt for you guys. So if you want to be in with a chance to win this incredible signed Kostas Tsimikas shirt, then all you need to do is go to redmenplus.com and sign up as a club legend for this month's prize draw.
Yes, welcome back. Yeah, if you want to get yourself a signed Kostas Tsimikas Liverpool shirt, then either upgrade from club captain to club legend if you're an existing Redmen Plus subscriber, or go over there and join right now. You get into our Discord, which is full of wonderful human beings, and when the Reds are crap, what we need to do is stay off social media because it's toxic when we're good. Remember the summer after we won the European Cup, 2 weeks later, it was just an abyss. It was like, we just won the fucking European Cup. It's bad, but it's unbearable when it's bad. But our Discord is a lovely little community hub of nice, sound, like-minded individuals. So, plenty of extra perks, as well as being in the hunt for that Kostas Tsimikas shirt. Right. It was the question before the break, and that was Graeme Potter made one career appearance against Liverpool. Who was it for? Bonus points for the year. Competition and results. Right, because I had to restart my laptop during this, I'm going to have to re-find the exact answers to this out, but I do know the team. Does anyone want to...
You're saying...
Well, I'd say West Brom.
I'm saying Stoke.
Oh, the correct answer is Stoke.
Hey.
It's like the originals versus the newbies all over again.
We're back again. Run it back.
So
check out the quiz.
It was Stoke City. Yeah, check out the red.
No, don't.
Sorry, good. Anyone guess the year?
I thought it was in the 90s, but...
Maybe 96?
It was in the 90s. It was not 96.
You thought 2000, so I'd say maybe later?
Incorrect.
It was earlier.
It was...
So 94, 95.
94. It was in 94, 95 was exactly the season.
Okay.
Competition...
You'd have to say League Cup.
Can't be in the league when it was Stoke. That has to be the league,
League Cup, third round, Tuesday the 25th of October, 1994. Score?
We won.
2-1.
We won 2-1. I'll give you an extra bonus point if you name,
goal scorers.
The goal scorers.
94.
God.
Christ.
I forgot. We got Rush Fowlers. Redknapp.
Well, it was Ian Rush. Ian Rush scored both goals for Liverpool.
What a guy.
We got assists. I'm pushing it now.
Steve McManaman set up the first in the fourth minute. Rob Jones set up the second in the 56th. Who scored Stoke's goal?
God.
There's only two players, maybe three names I recognise from this team. They had Carl Muggleton in goal, which is only because I was a goalie at the time and I knew every goalie on planet Earth.
Yeah,
I vaguely recall Carl Beeston. And their centre forward was... I feel like. Hang on a second. Let me just check.
Can you tell us anything else about the centre forward? The guy who scored.
This is a forward. Yeah, he was. He's married to a very famous baroness at this point. Tory.
He is.
No, well, he probably is if she is. She is associated with football. She was a. Karen Brady's husband.
Pesky Scalido.
Paul Pesky Scalido.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. He scored
for Plymouth.
She's 100% Tory, by the way. She's Alan Sugar's best mate. You can't not be a Tory if you're that.
Paul Pesky Scalido played for Fulham, Sheffield United, Stoke City, and the West Bromwich Albion.
I did not know they were married.
Made a total of four appearances against us, scoring two goals in that time. One for Stoke, one for Fulham.
You opened it up and I delivered it. There you go.
Any of that stuff, you're brilliant. I'm probably more in our age bracket than than let's say Chloe's, for example. You alright, Tom? I would love to be able to do that.
I mean, on your
There we go. That's the answer. If you got that right, you're absolute geniuses. Let's move the conversation on then. Injury update. So still no Diaz, no Jota, no Virgil, no Artur. Although Jota, Klopp was quite pleased with his recovery, wasn't he? He said he looked good out on the training pitch and stuff. But still looking at probably mid February before we see him really back in contention.
He kind of lined that with Real Madrid, didn't he?
Yeah. You can't afford to mess around with Jota at this point.
Again.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to bring him back, we need him back for the rest of the season. Still no Bobby. That's the real worry one. That's gone from being a short-term thing to just a total mystery length of absence. The last word from Premier Injuries was, Klopp said it was a short-term thing and then he felt it again and now they really don't kind of know. Darwin Núñez should be back in training today. And Costas got a knock to his back on Tuesday. Not that I think he would have played in this one anyway. So, big decision to be made. First question, Steve Plunkett. How many of the starting 11 versus Wolves have to keep their place for this game?
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Not many. I don't think you can afford to go with the same. I get that Klopp came out and said those that show fight for the shirt are in the box seat for the positions. But this is a game where our opposition's biggest strength is in the centre of the park. So, whilst Bacetic was really good, he also got dragged in his last game in a Premier League match when he played as the eight rather than six, came off at half time. Mm-hmm. There will be games that are better suited for him than others. I think if we're not resilient in the midfield, we might have a problem. So I'm not imagining too many of those guys keep their place. Gakpo probably plays on the left. If we get Nunes fit, Nunes down the centre with Salah, and we perhaps play a little bit more counter-attacking. It's the midfield. Thiago will keep his place. Mm-hmm. And then potentially you'd see Fabinho coming back in. And he likes Harvey Elliott against Chelsea as well, because he's done that first game of the season and made that tactical change in the FA Cup, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree on the Bajetic point. I think if we potentially weren't playing Chelsea, even though they're not in the greatest moment, you might see him just go again, because God only knows he deserves it. Based on his performance against Wolves, I think he was outstanding. I'm not saying anything new. I said it on my post-match stuff. You all said it. He was absolutely superb. Let's make no bones about it. But I don't think he starts this one. For all the reasons Steve kind of alluded to in terms of Chelsea, a midfield battle, etc., etc. I think Naby Keita keeps his place in the side. I don't think you can overlook how influential he was in that performance as well as a unit. I think he'd be tempted to go with Elliot back into midfield. I think, depending on Nunes, there's actually scope to play Elliot on the right wing and sort of shuffle things about that way, keep him out there. Thiago, absolutely, of course. Other than that, I think you see pretty much wholesale changes. Gakpo definitely is involved, I think. But yeah, I think you've got to go with Keita. I don't like being beholden to Naby Keita because he's probably going to leave at the end of the season. So the thought of having to play him, or Ox for that matter, and listen, both of them as individuals, fine. But the thought of having to play him isn't nice, and it doesn't sit well with me, but it's a results business. And we are in the business of getting results, especially right now.
The Naby conundrum remains the Naby conundrum, and that he played the full 90, which basically never happens on a Tuesday. Are we then saying, go on, Naby, you're going again? Now, if that was anyone else, they would, because like Thiago's just been going again and again and again. Henderson does the same, largely Fabinho does the same. The problem is that they do the same and they go again and again and again because Naby Keita can't. Now, is this one of their four where you go, all right, Naby, well, you're back to being 30 minutes? And then that then means someone's coming back in. Does the skipper come back in? I do think that... I don't think our best midfield has Jordan Henderson in it at this point. Now, it might have him in the six instead of Fabinho. It might, because I think Fabinho's been rubbish this season. I think he's looked a little better since the break, but he's still been largely rubbish. I do think that there's a case to be made to put two just better trickier footballers, you know, better lads on the ball in those eight. Thiago will be one. Absolutely, I think he's the one that's nailed on. And then, you know, maybe chance Harvey again, or I would push Keita.
Yeah,
but I don't know whether they've got the bottle to do that, because if you push Keita for this, does that then take Keita out for the games that follow? You drive yourself mad.
It's a kind of a. It is a must win, and it isn't a must win, because given our current league position, we're right now not in the running for the prizes at the end of the season in terms of league for anything really. But it's a game we can't afford to lose. And Keita asks questions of people when he's on the ball, more so than Henderson would, more so than Fabinho would. I completely agree with you that our best midfield right now doesn't include Henderson. And my concern is, will it ever again going forward? Because he's run himself into the ground, hasn't he, over the years for Liverpool, and it's taken its toll on him physically. So I kind of get Dan's points. You're reluctant to say, let's put our eggs in the Naby Keita basket, but he's a good footballer, and when he's fit and he's able to play, he offers you something a little bit different. His pressing stats are amazing, if you ever take the time to look at those. And he just might be the guy that makes Chelsea's deep lying centre midfielder not join in with the other two and pushes them back a little bit. I kind of favour playing a little bit on the counter-attack against these, because we've got pace, although I've not seen Gakpo stretch his legs yet, which is a little bit of a worry for me.
Yeah, I want to see. Yeah, I'd like to see what he's got in that regard. Darwin Nunez being available would be huge to that, yeah, because that changes the change complexion of how you counter attack. But just interesting that how Chelsea land up against Palace at the weekend. They went 4-2-3-1. Conor Gallagher and Jorginho as a double pivot. Ziyech, Chukwuemeka and Mason Mount behind Kai Havertz. And then the changes they made as the game wore on. Kovacic came in, Aubameyang, Koulibaly and Azpilicueta all came on at various stages during that game. That doesn't scare me as much, that team. You know, they can add one or two bits. Like, Kovacic is a much better midfielder than Conor Gallagher. In a two, I think Conor Gallagher's a good midfielder. I think that's what they'll go for this. Yeah. And maybe that's one of those ones where it does take Bacetic out of the conversation. Mm. But there'll be a lot of people, I'm certain, they'll be in the comments of people saying Bacetic does need them out there. We've got one here from the gamer saying Bacetic has covered more ground and looked more comfortable than Fabinho has all season. Their difference, Naby and Bacetic made closing spaces and being able to cover ground was eye-opening, gave Thiago freedom. And, that, you know, the problem is, again, it's that you're relying on Naby to be the guy who helps Bacetic be along, because that, again, it's forever a concern. But I do kind of agree with that. I wouldn't be against it. Just, you're right, it's Chelsea, so I am shitting my pants at the idea of throwing a guy who turned 18 3 months ago as the lone six in a Premier League game, in a must-win Premier League game. Mm-hmm. Sometimes players just do it, though, you know.
They do, and as, like I say, I was there on Tuesday night, and there's absolutely no two ways about his performance. It was first class, and he has the football IQ, he has all the intelligence, he has the awareness, he has everything it takes. He has the physicality, we shouldn't sort of undermine that. He is a physical enough lad to go in and do a job. However, in pretty much all of them departments, he's not where peak Fabinho is. Now, I'm fully aware we haven't seen peak Fabinho once this season, I know that, but this is Chelsea, and this is probably Mateo Kovacic, who has a nasty habit of being brilliant against us. Yeah. Now, the last thing you want to do is throw Bajetic in there, who's full of confidence right now. He's sort of breaking into Liverpool's side. Mm-hmm. He's making his way. We're all lauding him. He gets man the match in a lot of scopes in the week. And all of a sudden, you throw him into this game. It doesn't go well for him. He gets run ragged a little bit. And all of a sudden, his confidence is knocked, his development. Jurgen Klopp is not going to want to stunt this kid's development. Yeah. He can see how good he is.
If he's a superstar in the making, it might, that's what I'm saying, he might be like, God, I can't not put this kid in. Yeah. But I agree. I said this on the podcast, is that his level, or if he has a brilliant end to the season, in reality, for a 17, just turned 18-year-old lad, then just being a useful squad member is actually a huge step in his career to be able to just give Fabinho a bit of time off. So if he can come into this game with 20 minutes to go or 15 minutes to go, then that shows that he's a really, really talented footballer. But you're right, we do have to kind of protect his interest. Mm-hmm. The next question really then is, who has to come back in? Because I'm certain there'll be people who have looked at that side against Wolves and gone, I kind of largely want to see that again. Okay. But you've got, I think the nailed on ones are fairly obvious. Salah's nailed on, he will just come back in. And Trent is nailed on and he will come back in. I think then as a tier below that, Steve, I think you're looking at Fabinho is just fractionally below them in terms of like the absolute necessity that it will just happen.
I think Robbo's nailed on.
And Robbo actually, right, is nailed on. And then maybe there's a conversation to be had around Matip.
Yeah, there is a conversation to have between Gomez and Matip. Matip's not been brilliant in the last sort of half a dozen games or so. You can point to mistakes. You can point about a craziness to engage the ball far too far up the field, telling his central defensive partner down the river. I probably would still go with him over Gomez, purely because of the way that Gomez overcommitted himself for the third goal against Brighton, which was schoolboy defending. You just can't dive in like that. Looking at the game in midweek, I thought from a IQ point of view, I thought Wolves' front three, front line was absolutely dreadful, and it made it quite easy for us to control the game. We were playing against much better footballers with much higher footballing IQ. I think there will be lots of changes, and this is why I think Matip will come back in, Alisson will come back in, Trent, Robbo will come back in. So you've already only keeping one of your back five, which is already massive amount of changes. You alluded to it, Paul. If Nunes is fit, he's got to play. Salah comes back in. And then you're looking at the midfield. There's loads of argument to say leave the midfield as it is, but getting given the run around by Chelsea's midfield would be as damaging for Bacetic as Wolves' game was. Good for Bacetic.
Yeah, I think he held his own against City away without being particularly spectacular. You know, you never know sometimes with young lads, you know, that might have been the thing that's the catalyst that kicks him on. But I agree. I see no reason. I don't see any reason why you don't give Fabinho the benefit of the doubt. He's had a little bit of a time off, some rest. Jordan, I'm sure, will be banging on the door as well to do that. I'm not kind of bothered. I'm happy to see either play in the six. It will be that right side at eight that's a big question mark. I'm not totally enamoured with the idea of Jordan coming straight back in. If it was going back to Thiago, Fabinho, Henderson as a three, I want to see the lay. And I think, let me explain that. If we pick a set of lads and they go out on the pitch and they perform a better version of what we saw against Wolves, then I don't give a shit who starts. Mm. It's about whether they're able to perform that. The evidence so far this season says they're struggling a bit. So my logic as follows is to try and replicate as much of what you had against Wolves as possible. But Chelsea set up differently. Mm. They play differently. They've got better qualities in different areas of the pitch. So it might not be possible to have a one-size-fits-all. So I think a nice halfway house is definitely there. If Keita can go again, let him go again.
Yeah,
Fabinho starting in the six. Mm. Thiago, Keita is in the midfield. And then Salah's going to come naturally back in. And there's a question, let's do this next. Salah, do you keep Elliot on the right and put Salah centre-forward?
That's Nunes dependent for me.
Okay.
That's Nunes. You know, because if Nunes is available, he comes in centrally, Gakpo on the left, Salah on the right. If Nunes isn't available, I think you do that. I think you do go Elliot, Salah, Gakpo in that order, yeah.
What's the...
Yeah, I agree. If you can isolate their right-sided centre-back and Azpilicueta one-on-one with Nunes or a Gakpo with an overload down that side, pace, power, precision, good footballers. Mm. What Gakpo does really well is look after the ball and bring other people into play. Whilst we say we haven't seen him stretch his legs and we don't know how quick he is in a foot race, he's good with the ball. Yeah. Play the ball into him and it sticks and he gives it to someone who can use it. And I really like that about him. I think Chelsea's backline, particularly the likes of Thiago Silva and Azpilicueta, are there to be got at with pace. They've both got professional fouls in them all day long, so I think you should test that. So if Nunes is fit, I think we drop the front line a little bit deeper and we try and run in behind.
Mm. Interesting stuff. Just go back to the midfield chat. I've seen Mahmoud at the super chat from the Born Red Pod. Bacetic, Keita, Thiago for me. I just keep up the great work, guys. Thanks so much, mate. Front three-wise... I don't think Gakpo was exceptional against Wolves, but I also do think that was part of the better functioning of how we played, playing him central. With no Bobby, I just don't like Darwin Nunes centre forward. I think he feels very Divock Origi, but without being as good a finisher. You know, in that he doesn't suit our style of play as much. I would be really interested to see that Gakpo continue with that false nine kind of thing, see if he can knit it together a little bit. Mm. Salah on the right, if Darwin's back, put him on the left. Let you know, because he's been so explosive down that side.
Mm.
He's just, you can't, and that's where the space is. The space is always more on the flanks than it's going to be elsewhere, depending, of course, what Chelsea do in terms of the fullbacks. If it's Azpilicueta, he's not going to commit as much to attack, but he'll... As you say, it will be an interesting challenge to put raw pace up against them if that's the case. Again, just to revisit, they did have Chalabar there at the weekend. He's not a world class fullbacks in there. That's an interesting one for me. That decision of was Wolves us just necessity. So we've got Carvalho can play, has done a couple of games from the left. Elliot can play on the right, Gakpo can play everywhere, so fuck it, just lash Gakpo in the forward, the centre forward, or was that another little glimpse of is this something we're going to build on?
Yeah, it's interesting. I agree with the point on Gakpo. I thought it was really good. We didn't see him sort of getting behind or stretch his legs at any point. We haven't seen that yet to date, but in terms of sort of being a wall and linking things up and playing 1-2s, I thought he was really intelligent at that, and that was really nice to see. I think a lot of this and what we do with the front three obviously will be Nunes dependent, but also the fullbacks and their roles going to change, because it's not going to be Milner and Tsimikas, it's probably going to be Trent and Robbo. So their overlapping will be far more prevalent in this game.
Yeah.
So therefore, Gakpo cutting inside and allowing Robbo to do that, and the same with Salah on the other side, and allowing Trent will probably influence some of these decisions. But I think when we sort of name the front three and sort of their positions. They're just nominal. That's what it looks like on a screen. But I think we're going to see Gakpo and Nunes in particular swap and change a hell of a lot. So, for instance, if Gakpo does start on the left, there's no reason why 15, 20 minutes in, those two will just switch and the roles reverse. So that's really nice to have.
Yeah, no, it is. It's interesting. It'd be nice, again, the Darwin Nunes thing, we're just going to be more of a threat if when we've got more threats on the pitch. Mm. And look, if he's not there, I'm not against that idea that Gakpo goes to the left, Salah goes central, and you keep Harvey Elliott on the right, because I think Ox can functionally perform certain bits. I just don't think he's good enough to play in the front three. No, really, no. You know, and Elliott, I think, is. You know, he's not got the pace. You know, you're losing something a little bit there, but he's got the guile. I just think he's a really, really good footballer, and he's playing with confidence at the moment. So I wouldn't be against saying to Harvey, you know what, mate, great goal. You played really well. Go and do that. Go and do that again. So, some interesting options. What would you do? You're watching at home. Let us know in the comments on that one. Right. We'll do our 11s. And we'll have another little glance at the fixtures for this weekend. Steve, what's your 11? Lay it out for us.
So it's Ali, Trent, Matip, Konate, Robbo. I'd like to see Bissetic because I'd like to see that develop. But I think it'll be Fabinho, Keita and Thiago with Gakpo, Nunes and Salah up top.
Yeah, mine's identical. Exactly the same, yeah. And if Nunes isn't available, I'd go Elliott in the front three.
I think if I was to take something from that midweek game, you know, so it feels like you're dangling a carrot, I would go, Alisson to come back in, Trent at right back, Robbo left back. I would keep Gomez left centre half with Konate. I really want to see Joe get a go there. I think that, because I think we've been grooming him for it for a while. He's the most similar to Van Dijk, I think, in what we've got. And not in physicality, but I think in calmness, and I think in a bit of his skill set. I don't think the injuries have helped him. I don't think he suits being the more aggressive of the two centre halves, but I think he's got the right sort of, you know, headspace to be the guy who plays from that side. I think Konate and Matip are both better from the right. So I would do that, and I would let Matip have a little bit more time off. See if he can get a tune out of Joe. Is one I'm driving up there. Yeah, in reality, I'd do something wild. I'd put Joe Gomez right back and put Trent in the six. But well, no, I don't think that's going to happen against Chelsea out of the blue. I would bring Fabinho back in. I would keep Thiago and Keita. And as mentioned there, I would put, if Darwin Nunes is fit, I'd put him from the left. I'd keep Gakpo central, and I'd have Salah from the right. And that way, again, it just feels like a bit more like a recognisable Liverpool front three. Let Gakpo be the guy who drops in and does little neat touches and give and goes and stuff like, because Keita will look exciting because you want someone to vacate that centre forward space deep, which is how we used to play it. And I think Gakpo did that, whereas I don't think Darwin Nunes is good at doing that. He wants to drift left or he wants to go in behind. And there are times and situations for that. But I think when you're trying to build a win at home, I think we need to be better in possession. But that's what I'd do anyway. Let us know yours in the comments. Let's have a little look at the fixtures for this weekend. We're actually filming this, we're live on this on Thursday. City play Tottenham tonight, which is an interesting little turn of events. Obviously, the games are starting to be kind of put back into the fixture list. In terms of the weekend, then we're the early kickoff on the 12:30 Saturday. Leicester Brighton is at 3 p.m. alongside Southampton Villa. West Ham Everton, which is the God.
Loser loses all. Instead of winner takes all, loser. Well, I think the manager.
Loser loses the manager, though.
Loser loses the manager. I'm genuinely convinced of that.
The worst thing for both football teams there is a draw that might keep both in exactly the same position that they're kind of in. Yeah. You know, where it's not bad enough that you've got to carry the manager out atop a burning pitchforks.
West Ham have just signed Danny Ings as well, haven't they?
Have they?
Yeah, this morning, yeah. £15 million.
Everton, a huge.
There's your winner.
That's a winner. Danny Ings scores against Everton. Literally, I'm convinced it's almost exclusively.
Yeah.
Danny Ings, well, if he's fit to play in that game, there is no world in which Danny Ings
They have no choice but to play him in that game because Skamaka's not 100% match fit and Antonio's fell off a cliff.
Great signing. What are Everton doing? Why haven't they?
They tried. They
should have moved
him. They wanted him.
They wanted him on loan. Moved
heaven and earth to get
him. Wanted him on loan. They've got no money. They've got this financial thing hanging over their head, haven't they, where they had to plead.
Wild. Bournemouth Forest. Interesting to see where Forest can continue the recent turnabout in form. Crystal Palace Newcastle is 5:30. it's mad how that's gone from being like a good game, but like, yeah, oh yeah, that Crystal Palace at home, Newcastle should be a Crystal Palace win, so like Newcastle high flying. City back in action again, 2 o'clock on Sunday, hosting Wolves. I'd love it if Wolves had just learned something from, you know, from us and then could take it into that game. But they are historically a club that occasionally causes them. Mm. Like Southampton and Wolves are the two teams that I think do better
and
all
Palace
the time.
Actually, yeah. Palace, Palace okay, yeah. Adama Traore normally yeah. enjoys them.
Well, Lopetegui's got to realise at some point you've got to start Nunes and Cunha because they give him options, they give him space, they give him guile, they give him intelligence. Yeah. Got to play Adama Traore because he's been a perennial pain in the arse for Manchester City, hasn't he? So that's an interesting game.
It is a very interesting game. Leeds host Brentford. Arsenal United. It's in this Arsenal in this run of fixtures now, aren't they? Where if they come out unscathed from like their next six or whatever, then they're just champions. It's just there's no other way of looking at it. They've just done the North London Derby and won 2-0. They've got United on Sunday. They've got City in the FA Cup fourth round. They've got Everton away, Brentford, then City. Then they've got Arsenal. They've got left. It's a tasty little period for them if they come out on top. Then
this is their biggest challenge because of how direct Manchester United are. They don't see that every week, and Rashford in particular is in a rich vein of form. And we'll
they beat him as well, didn't they? United,
yeah.
They beat him
without,
this season,
as Ten Hag said, without Casemiro. So don't make a big deal about the fact he
Baz, you shitting yourself for the weekend. West Ham.
Loser loses the manager, Baz.
Loser leaves town. So, thanks, mate.
We'll have someone. We were debating whether it's Sean Dyche or Sam Allardyce in like a Hell in the Cell game.
Amazing. Thanks, mate. Zad, there you go. Barry from Toffee TV, everyone. Not asked. Because you've got to be not. Interesting stuff. Yeah, the other game is Fulham versus Tottenham. It would be there's obvious things that need to go in Liverpool's favour here. We could do with Arsenal beating Man United in reality, as much as that's a bit sad. I don't want Arsenal to win the league. I want us to win the league, but it's not possible. So yeah, we could do with United hitting a little sticky patch of form here. The draw against Crystal Palace is. If they are a team that's going to be fighting for fourth rather than second, Arsenal will win that.
Yeah.
And that'll kickstart a little run of United dropping a handful of points. Mm-hmm. And the Fulham Spurs one's even more interesting because, you know, you need Fulham to win that, although in reality you want to be clawed and Fulham back.
How has it got to this?
Welcome to our world.
How has it got to
Fulham
that?
Fulham have played 20 games this season. You know, like it's like they've had the perfect run, but to that point, they're kind of in a little bit of a false position. Mm. That'll be their 21st. But Spurs have only played 19. You don't want Tottenham starting to open up a gap.
I think Fulham will beat Spurs.
Really?
Yeah, Spurs are in a dreadful place right now.
I really hope so. But everyone keeps telling me Tottenham dreadful. Dreadful. They're fucking there. They've been in the top five all season.
Right now is the key thing. Yeah. You've got the manager asking for technical directors and club doctors to come out and speak on the microphone and tell everyone how bad the world is at Spurs. That is not great if you're involved in that.
Yeah. I suppose the only games that Spurs have won in the last five, they beat Leeds 4-3. Mm. It was the final game before the break. And then they came back to a draw with Brentford, lost to Villa. They got the win against a 4-0 win against Crystal Palace.
They keep coming back aside from that, like second half FC, aren't they? They keep having to get themselves back into matches. It's strange.
Very familiar. sad. Right, okay, let's get back to the Reds then. Big challenge. How do we feel this game's going to go? I want to go score predictions, but give me a general feeling around it today.
I'm gonna be positive, and I'm going to go 2-0 the Reds. I think we'll have to play cautiously and perhaps a little bit more on the counter-attack than we would like, because we know you can run off our midfield. Whatever variant of midfield goes out there, you still can run off them. If you go with more expansive Keita playing slightly further up and you include Thiago, they're better going that way than that way. So it kind of would worry me a little bit. So I think we'll maybe line up a little bit deeper in terms of a back line and try and use the running behind space, because they've got some older defenders who will not relish playing against pace, which is Salah and Nunes. It should Nunes be fit, so I think we'll tweak our tactics very slightly for this one.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think we have to be smart with the way we go about it. Sort of dragging their older centre halves out of position and getting the likes of Salah and Nunes in behind will be absolutely crucial to the way it pans out. I think less of a false dawn. I think what we've seen in midweek with the Wolves game could be a bit of an eye-opener for some of the lads who weren't involved, some of the more senior figures. And I think that could be the ideal solution. Like, Klopp has probably given him a multiple fleas in the ears as this season's gone on. So this time he's gone, do you know what? Forget it. I'm going to play all these young lads. They're going to show you how it's done. And then it's up to you. And I hope that is the case. And I think it might well be. So I'm also going to be positive on the way the game pans out. Chelsea are in a worse state than we are. They're throwing players at it left, right and centre. I think we get it done. And I think we get it done, I want to say 2-0 as well.
Okay, cool. I like the sound of that. I really do. I this is one of those games where I'll take a resolute 1-0 again. That's what I want to see. A clean sheet, a win with a clean sheet is just huge for us. I want to show what we did against Wolves. And look, Wolves are crap in attack, but also just to highlight that, Chelsea are crap in attack as well. Happened so far. If we can frustrate a really good side, then that will, I think that will embolden us further. I think this side needs to know that it's not porous. And I think opponents need to know that we're not porous as well. I don't want everyone thinking they've got an easy ride. And, you know, we need to start to build that resilience in. So that's kind of what I want to see. I'd love it if we just, you know, swashbuckled our way forward. But ultimately, we've tried that all season long. And it just means that it's all well and good. It's a bit like the Indiana Jones scene where the guy's got the swords and he's whipping it all around and everyone's going, that's great, bang.
Yeah, you know exactly. What
I
mean?
All the best. And we've been that side. This is not, I want us to be the guy who just goes, great, sound, we'll just shoot you with one bullet instead that finishes it off, rather than us being
there's two guys in their squad with pace, Sterling and Aubameyang. It's how you manage those guys, because their midfield's like ours. You know, it's a good midfield, but it's not particularly mobile.
No.
Kovacic is never going to be a third man running out, strip your defence and score. Touch wood. Not famous last words. No, but typically they suffer. This is why we're 9th and 10th, because we're being overpowered in midfield, and it's happening to them as well.
Yeah, true. One point here, a couple of comments before we wrap up. Victor Ojomo says, Paul, how on earth would you pay Trent as a 6, not even the number 8? Come on. I think people underestimate what a huge step up it is to play number 8 and the skill set required to play in that position. Trent might well have it, but look at what like Thiago and Keita and Elliot have got, and it's like it is like perfect touch in small spaces, how you shift your body to get out of those kind of things. Trent might have that, but you don't need that in right back the way that you do in an 8. I think he could be a great 8 for us. But I also think it's a bit of like a Philip Lahm kind of thing for me. I think he could be an absolutely exceptional number 6 for us because he's got the passing range. He is a good defender as well. I don't know. As a wild
actor. Sorry, so much of that as well is about having more of the game in front of you, I think, because he has all of the game pretty much in front of him from right back. But if you suddenly advance him even more into like an 8, all of a sudden he's got these runners coming off either side of him. It's like, God, which way do I turn? And that's such a difficult skill set to acquire. So for me, it would be a 6.
It's interesting, because Chelsea will likely sit in as well to negate the pace that we've got. You've got a guy like that picking the ball up off your back four, turning around with 10 yards of space in front of him. He's like a quarterback.
That's it, yeah. It's Gerrard, like, isn't it, at the time? Yeah.
Just looks in front of him and just, which one should I pick now?
Yeah, no, interesting stuff. We've had a super chat with a team from Donald Budai here. Thank you so much, Donald. Somebody's really put his money where his mouth is here, literally. Ali, Trent, Joel, Ibu, Robbo, Fab, Naby, Thiago, Nunes on the left, Gakpo through the centre, Mo on the right. See, I'm all in. I'm all, apart from the Joel shout, that was pretty much, I think, what I went through. Yeah, I'm happy with that. I think that's a good shout. I think the centre-back thing is all right. You know, in the absence of Van Dijk, I think we're lucky that we've got three really good centre-halves in there. I'm happy to see Joe get a go. I wouldn't be bothered either way if Matip played, because we know what he brings. He brings that ability to just shift the landscape of a football match by carrying the ball 30 yards up the pitch and unsettling people. So that would be absolutely sound. I think a lot of people doing the Mudrik versus Trent thing. Again, the disrespect that gets put on Trent Alexander-Arnold. And look, he might have a great game. And that's the point. Wingers go up against fullbacks, and wingers sometimes get the better of fullbacks because that's the best of part of football. No one really gives the fullback credit when they stop. You could stop a fullback, a winger, 9 times out of 10, but then it's the one where they get past. We've taken to blaming fullbacks, when in reality, none of us ever think about who Salah's up against when he goes past them and scores goals for fun. So, I'm interested to see Trent continue his good form, because I think his form has been excellent since the World Cup, and let's hope that it continues. Right, Sal, thank you so much. That will do us. Plenty more content from us this week to keep you entertained if you want it. I will be doing the Starting 11 prediction show on Thursday afternoon. Great. I've already told you what I want, but what will Jürgen do? I'm going to have a go at figuring that out, and you can help me along with that as well. Klopp's press conference will be up on Friday as well, in video and in podcast form, so you can check that out. The watch-along will return on Saturday at 12:30. Well, we'll be back for the team news reaction at 11:30. Quarter past 11, sorry, and then the watch-along is obviously, the game kicks off at 12:30. We've got Genuine Insight, which is being recorded tomorrow with Neil Jones. We've got Expert Insight. Mm-hmm. What was this week's one?
We've had a couple this week. It's mainly on the Middle East interest, but we've also had a transfer of insight as well, looking at all the interest.
Excellent. So, yeah, plenty of stuff over on YouTube, Acast, Spotify, and, of course, extra stuff on redmenplus.com as well. Anyway, gentlemen, thank you so much. Absolute pleasure. And I hope the Reds can continue to not be shite. That would be lovely. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more Bosch content and podcasts just like this, go over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.